Chapter 5. Revenge. She found Septimus in Black Market, and saw him before he noticed her. Through the thin crowd, she watched him as he talked to the gathered serfs and crew. The scruffy fall of his hair almost covered the bionics on the left side of his face, where his temple and cheek had been rebuilt with subtle augmetics of composite metals, contoured to match his facial structure. It was a degree of surgical sophistication she had rarely seen outside of the wealthiest theocratic covens and noble families of Terra's tallest spires. Even now, the other humans looked upon him with a varied clash of dislike, envy, trust, and adoration. Few slaves aboard the Covenant wore their value to the Night Lords so openly. With the communal market chamber less crowded than it had been before the siege of Krythe, it was also less stifling and oppressive. Unfortunately, without the press of bodies, it was also colder, as cold as the rest of the ship. Her breath misted as she watched the crowd. The attendant hunched alongside her seemed content to mutter to himself.
"I thought we'd captured more people," she said to him.
When he turned blind eyes up to her and didn't answer, she qualified her statement.
"The new slaves from Ganges. Where are they?"
"In chains, mistress. Chained in the hold. There they stay until we leave dock."
Octavia shuddered. This was her home now. She was an undeniable part of what went on here. Across the chamber, Septimus was still speaking. She had no idea what he was saying. His nostrilman came in a whispering flow, and Octavia could make out maybe one word in 10. Instead of trying to follow the thread of what he was saying, she watched the faces of those he spoke to. Several were scowling or jostling their fellows, but most seemed placated by whatever he was telling them. She smothered a grin at his impassioned sincerity. The way he turned to people with a gentle gesture to make a point, the way he argued with his eyes as well as his words. The smile died on her lips as she saw one of the faces in the crowd darkened by weariness. It was a face in mourning, and coping by wearing a mask of grim anger. Rather than interrupt Septimus, Octavia moved through the crowd, apologizing softly in Gothic as she made her way closer to the grief-stricken man. He noticed her as she neared, and she saw him swallow.
"Asafot hala surushan," he said, dismissing her with a weak wave of his hand.
"Vayave, I...
She felt a blush rising to her cheeks as the words stuck in her mouth.
"Vayave, Nisha!"
The people surrounding her were backing away now. She paid them no heed. Given what was hidden beneath the bandana around her forehead, she was used to being ostracized.
"I haven't seen you since the battle."
She forced the words to her lips.
"I just wanted to say,
Kishith. Well, they alas, all missay."
"But they have a nisha," she repeated. "I don't understand."
She said it in Gothic in case her halting nostraman hadn't been clear enough.
"Of course you don't."
The man made the dismissive gesture again. His bloodshot eyes were ringed by the dark circles of a mounting sleep debt, and his voice cracked.
"I know what you wish to say, and I do not wish to hear. No words will bring back my daughter."
His Gothic was rusty from disuse, but emotion lent meaning to the words.
"Shrella la leril,"
he sneered at her with a whisper.
"Vilith sardarithas volvelesiasorsol."
The words came from Septimus at the heart of the crowd. He pushed through the people to stand before the other man. Although the other slave was surely no older than 40, privation and sorrow had aged him far beyond his years.
Septimus, as ragged as he was almost youthful in comparison. A brief flicker of greeting passed between Septimus and Octavia as their eyes met, but it was gone as soon as it showed. The artificer looked down at the hunched slave, anger in his human eye.
"Watch your tongue when I can hear the lies you speak," he warned.
Octavia bristled at being defended, when she still had no idea what had been said. She wasn't a bashful maid, needing to be protected to stave off a fainting attack.
"Septimus, I can deal with this. What did you say to me?"
she asked the older man.
"I named you a whore that mates with dogs."
Octavia shrugged, hoping her blush didn't show.
"I've been called worse."
Septimus stood straighter.
"You are the heart of this unrest, Archaea. I am not blind. Your daughter was avenged. As poor a fate as it was, that is all that can ever be."
"She was avenged,"
Archaea answered in Gothic as well.
"But she was not protected."
In his hand, he clutched a Legion medallion. It caught the dim light with treacherous timing. Septimus rested his hands on the pistols at his hips, hanging in battered leather holsters.
"We are slaves on a warship. I grieved with you at Talicia's loss, but we live dark lives in the darkest of places."
His accent was awkward, and he struggled to find the words.
"Often we cannot even hope for vengeance, let alone safety. My master hunted her killer. The Blood Angel died a mongrel's death. I watched Lord Telos strangle the murderer, witnessing justice done with my own eyes."
His own eyes. Octavia glanced automatically to see his human eye, dark and kind, next to the pale blue lens mounted in his chrome eye socket.
"Tasha Orthila Vauveshi Lalis,"
the other man gave a mirthless laugh.
"This vessel is cursed."
Murmurs of agreement started up. It was nothing new. Since the girl's death, talk of omens and misfortune were running rampant among the mortal crew.
"When the new slaves walk among us, we will tell them of the damnation in which they now dwell."
Octavia couldn't understand Septimus's reply as he slipped back into Nostramon. She withdrew from the crowd, waiting for the gathering to finish. And at the edge of the huge chamber, she sat on an empty table. Her attendant trudged after her, as unbearably loyal as a stray dog she'd made the mistake of feeding.
"Hey!"
She nudged him with her boot.
"Mistress! Did you know the Voidborn?" "Yes, mistress. The young girl, only child ever born under Covenant. Dead now, to the angels of blood."
She lapsed back into silence for a while, watching Septimus arguing to quench all talk of rebellion. Strange that on any given imperial world he would probably be a wealthy man with his skills in great demand. He could fly atmospheric and suborbital craft. He spoke several languages. He knew how to use and maintain weapons, and worked with an artisan's care and a mechanic's efficiency on reconstructive artificer duties. Yet here, he was just a slave. No future, no wealth, no children, nothing. "No children," a thought struck her, and she gave the little attendant another nudge.
"Please do not do that," he grumbled.
"Sorry, I have a question."
"Ask, mistress."
"How is it that all these years, only one child was born on board?"
The attendant turned his blinded face up to her again, It reminded her of a dying flower trying to face the sun.
The ship, he said. The Covenant itself, it makes us sterile. Wombs wither and seed grows thin.
The little creature gave a childish shrug.
The ship, the warp, this life, my eyes.
He touched a bandaged hand to his threaded eyes.
This life changes everything, poisons everything.
Octavia chewed her bottom lip as she listened. Strictly speaking, she wasn't human in the most pedantic sense. The genetic coding in a navigator's bloodline left her in an awkward evolutionary niche, close to being a subspecies of Homo sapiens. Her earliest years were filled with lessons and tutors, hammering that very fact into her with stern lectures and complicated biological charts. Few navigators ever bred easily, and children were an incredibly treasured commodity to a navigator house, the coin with which to purchase a future. Had her life run its pre-planned course, she knew that after a century or two of service, she'd be recalled to the family holdings on Terra and linked to another low-level scion from an equally minor house, expected to breed for the good of her father's financial empire. Her capture had rather done away with that idea, and it was one of the aspects of this greasy, dimly lit slavery she actually considered something of a perk. Even so, her hand strayed to her stomach.
"What's your name?" she asked him.
The figure shrugged with a rustle of dirty rags. She wasn't sure if he'd never had a name or simply forgotten it, but either way, no answer was forthcoming.
"Well," she forced a smile, "would you like one?"
He shrugged again, and this time the gesture ended in a growl. Octavia saw why. Septimus was approaching. Behind him, the crowd was dispersing, going back to their ramshackle market stalls, or leaving the communal chamber in small groups.
"Hush, little hound," the taller pilot smiled.
His augmented eye whirred as it focused, the blue lens widening like a dilating pupil.
"It's fine."
Octavia patted the hunched man's shoulder. Beneath the ragged cloak, his arm felt cold and lumpy, not human, not completely.
"Yes, mistress," the attendant said softly.
The growling ceased, and there was the muffled click-chuck of a firearm chambering around. Septimus reached forward to brush a stray lock of Octavia's hair behind her ear. She almost tilted her cheek into his palm, warmed by the intimacy of the gesture.
"You look filthy," he told her, as blunt and cheery as a little boy with good news.
Octavia leaned away from his touch, even as he was withdrawing his hand.
"Right," she said. "Well, thank you for that observation, idiot."
"What?"
"Nothing."
As she said the word, her attendant started growling at Septimus again, obviously registering the annoyance in her voice.
"Observant little fellow,"
she considered giving him another pat on the shoulder.
"Still talking of rebellion?"
Septimus looked over at the diminishing crowds, masking a sigh.
"It is difficult to convince them the vessel is not cursed when we're being murdered by our own masters."
He hesitated, then turned back to her.
"I missed you."
A nice try, but she wouldn't let herself warm to that.
"You were gone a long time,"
she offered, keeping neutral.
"You sound displeased with me. Is it because I said you looked filthy?"
"No."
She barely resisted an irritated smile.
"Idiot. Did everything go well?"
Septimus knuckled his scruffy hair back from his face.
"Yes. Why are you angry with me? I don't understand."
"No reason,"
she smiled. Because we've been docked for 3 days, and you haven't been to see me, some friend you are. I'm not angry.
You sound angry, mistress.
You're supposed to be on my side, she told her attendant.
Yes, mistress. Sorry, mistress.
Octavia tried a change of tack. The murders? Was it Uzas?
It was this time.
Septimus met her eyes again.
First Claw have taken him to the prison, Dick.
He's captured. And there's an influx of new crew members. Maybe there'll be some stability now. Things can return to normal.
Septimus gave his crooked smile.
I keep trying to tell you, this is normal.
So you say, she sniffed.
What was the shriek like? Inside the station, I mean.
He grinned at the memory.
It jammed the aura scryers. Every auspex drowned in interference. Then it slaughtered all in-station and off-station vox. But there was more. It actually killed the lights all across Ganges. I have no idea if Deltrian and the Exalted planned it or how it worked, but it was a surprise to me.
I'm glad you had fun.
She retied her ponytail and checked her bandana was tight.
It was less amusing for us. The shriek drinks power like you wouldn't believe. The engines dimmed to almost nothing, and the void shields were down the entire time. I had nothing to do but wait while we drifted for days. I hope we don't use it again.
You know they will. It worked, didn't it?
His grin faded when she didn't return it.
What's wrong? What has happened? Ashila, Sorsulan, Ashila, Utholan, she said softly.
What do those words mean?
He raised an eyebrow. His artificial eye clicked as it tried to mimic the expression.
It's a rhyme. I know that.
She resisted the urge to sigh. He could be so slow sometimes.
What does it mean?
It doesn't translate directly.
She held up a finger.
If you say it doesn't translate directly to me one more time, I will have my little friend here shoot you in the foot. Understood?
Understood, mistress.
Her attendant moved its hands beneath its overcloak.
Well,
Septimus began with a scowl at the hunched slave.
It doesn't rhyme in Gothic. That's what I meant. And both Sorsolan and Utholan are words that mean sunless, but with different, emotions. It means more or less, I am blind. I am cold.
Why do you ask?
What's wrong?
Akia's daughter, the Voidborn.
Septimus's hands, bound in fingerless gloves of scuffed leather, rested on his low-slung gun belt. He'd attended the girl's funeral only 5 months before, when her parents had let the shrouded corpse be released through the airlock with so many other slain human crew.
What about her?
Octavia met his eyes.
I've been seeing her. I saw her while you were away on the station. And a week ago, I heard her. She called those words to me.
The door didn't open. It burst outwards in a storm of debris that filled the corridor with smoke. Emergency alarms sounded at once, sealing nearby bulkheads as the vessel's automated systems registered an enemy attack and the risk of hull breaches. In the smoky mist, 5 towering silhouettes ghosted forwards, their slanted red eyes backlit and streaming with targeting data. Bolter shells cracked and crashed against the walls around them. detonating with the crumpling pops of bursting grenades, showering the legionaries with fragments of iron and burning chunks of explosive shell. Third Claw had opened up the moment their prey sight had adjusted to the smoke. Talos emerged first from the mist, bolt around, shredding the armor from his warplate, ripping chunks of ceramite overlay from the cabled musculature. He closed the distance in the span of a heartbeat, swinging his sword in a carving arc. Retinal imagery displayed the grievous damage to his armor in aggressively bright runes, and was immediately joined by the flatline sound of a slain warrior's armor no longer transmitting life signs. Garius, Third Claw, vital signs lost. His eye lenses warned. Such a shame.
You've been fighting mortals for too long,
Talos spoke through the stinging bite of nerve nullifiers. His armor injected the fast-acting narcotics right into his heart, spine, and bloodstream, but their effects were limited in the face of this horrendous fire. Bolters suffered against Legion armor. They were weapons far better at breaking flesh than ceramite. But despite his mockery, the Master Salt was taking its toll. He didn't even need to wrench his blade clear. The blow had cleaved Garius's head clean from his shoulders. Talos gripped the bloody collar guard, ignoring his brother's life pissing out from the severed neck in red spurts all over his gauntlet. In death, Garius served as a shield of meat and armor. Detonating shells pounded into the headless corpse until Talos hurled it at the closest member of Third Claw. Zal was among them a moment later, his chain blade crashing against a brother's helm hard enough to send the warrior sprawling into the wall. Talos risked a momentary glance to see Zal's warplate as chewed up and broken as his own. Zal was already leaping at another of the branded, heedless of the damage he'd sustained. Uzas, ever devoid of grace, had hurled himself at the closest of the enemy and was doing his level best to punch his gladius through the other warrior's soft throat armor. All the while, he screamed a meaningless screed of syllables into the warrior's faceplate, giving voice to mindless hate. His armor wept fluid from a thousand cracks, but he rammed the short blade home with a howl. The branded warrior jerked, polluting the vox with his gargling. Uzas laughed as he soared ineffectively, his sword grating against the dying Nightlord's spine without severing it. A flat line chimed through everyone's helm receptors. Sarlath, Third Claw, vital signs lost.
Blades!
Dalcarus called to his surviving brothers. Talos ran for him, the blade of angels swinging with a trail of crackling force streaming behind. Their swords crashed together, locking fast, neither one of them giving ground. Both warriors spoke through the breathy grunts of painful exertion.
Foolish to use bolters,
Talos grinned behind his faceplate.
It was a risk, I admit,
Dalcarus grunted back. The grinding teeth of his chainsword clicked and ticked as they tried to whir against the golden weapon it parried. Garius's blood spat and popped as it burned dry on Talos's energized blade. Velshan, Third Claw, vital signs lost. Talos couldn't see how the kill was made, but he heard Zal give a roar over the whine of another flat line. He doubled his effort, leaning harder into the struggle, but his damaged armor was betraying his strength. As his muscles burned, his retinal display flickered twice. Power was flashing erratically through his armor systems, and it was all he could do to keep his blade locked to Dalcarus's. He felt the unwelcome drag of his arms growing heavier. A spray of sparks spat from a rent in his back-mounted power pack.
"You are weakening,"
his enemy growled.
"And you are outnumbered," Talos grinned back.
Dalcarus broke the lock, disengaging savagely enough to send the prophet stumbling backwards. The chainsword skidded across Talos's sundered chestplate, scratching the defiled aquila emblazoned there. With a curse at his overbalanced swing, Dalcarus did all he could to ignore the flat line chiming. a stream of tinnitus proclaiming the deaths of his brothers. He moved back, sword up to guard against all of them, against all of First Claw. They stood as a pack, surrounded by the bodies of those they'd slain. In the clearing haze, Talos, Zal, Uzas, Sirion, and Mercutian stood with blooded blades in their fists. Their armor was shattered into ruin, and for the briefest moment of empathy, Dalcarus envisioned the amount of labor involved in repairing such punishment. Talos and Zal stood shredded by gunfire, their armor plating ripped away, and the underlayers blackened, punctured, and burned. Their helms were dented to the point of malformation. Zal was missing an eye lens, and both of Sirion's were cracked beyond easy repair. Half of Uzas's features were visible through his broken faceplate. The leader of the Branded, the last soul to hold the title, locked eyes with the smirking, drooling fool.
"This is your fault," Dalcarus said. "Your madness has cost us every life taken this night."
Uzas licked teeth made dark by bleeding gums. Dalcarus doubted the beast even understood his words.
"Let's finish this."
He set the teeth of his chain blade whirring again, chewing air.
"Do not dishonor Third Claw by making me wait for my death."
Sirion's laughter broke out, stripped raw by his vox speakers.
"Dishonor,"
he wheezed the word through chuckles.
"A moment, please."
He disengaged the seals at his collar, removing his scarred helm and wiping his eyes on a deed parchment he tore from his armor.
"Honor," he says, as if it matters. "These words from a warrior who was a murderer at 13 and a rapist 2 years later. Now he cares about honor. That's beautiful."
Talos raised his bolter. The double-barreled weapon was engraved with the deeds of a fallen warrior who'd achieved so much more than any of those in its new wielder's presence.
"Please," Dalcarus sighed, "do not execute me with Malkarion's weapon."
"Remove your helm." The prophet didn't move as he spoke. Sparks and lubricating oil still flicked and dripped from the wounds in his warplate. "You surrendered any right to choose your death the moment you forced this idiotic confrontation." Slowly, Dalcarus complied. Bareheaded, he faced First Claw. The deck smelled of blood's spicy scent, thinned by the chemical reek of bolter shell detonations. He offered a rueful smile, almost an apology.
"Why didn't you just kill Uzas?" he asked. "It would have ended this before it began."
"You are not foolish enough to truly believe that," Talos spoke softly, "and neither am I. This, as with all things in the Legion, is a wound torn open by revenge."
"I wish to join First Claw."
"Then you should not have come against us in Midnight Glad."
He kept his aim at Dalcarus's face.
"If you cannot dissuade your own squad from petty vengeance that costs loyal lives, what use are you to the remnants of the Legion?"
"You cannot control Uzas. Is there a difference? Are your lives worth so much more than ours?"
"Evidently they are," Talos replied, "because we are the ones with our guns to your face, Dalcarus."
"Talos, I..."
Both barrels bellowed. Tiny gobbets of meat with wet fragments of skull clattered across the walls and against their armor. Headless, the body toppled, crashing against the corridor wall before sliding down, slumping in crooked, graceless repose. They stood without speaking a word to one another for some time. Savaged armor sparked and made unwelcome joint-grinding sounds. as they lingered in the slaughter they'd created. At last, it was Talos who broke the stillness. He gestured at the bodies.
Drag them. Septimus will strip their armor.
2 months?
Talos laughed.
Please do not joke with me, Septimus. I'm not in the mood.
The human slave scratched his cheek where the polished metal met pale skin as he stared at the carnage strewn across his workshop. The 7 corpses, with their armor suffering only minimal damage, they could be stripped and the meat flushed into the void within a day. But all 5 members of First Claw were barely able to stand with the damage done to their warplate. Oil and lubricant ran in drying stains from cracked open punctures. Dents needed to be beaten out. Mangled ceramide had to be cut free and completely replaced. Torn layers of composite metals needed to be resealed, repainted, reformed. And the subdermal damage was even worse. False musculature made of fiber bundle cables needed to be reworked, rethreaded and rebuilt. Joint servos and gears had to be replaced or repaired. Stimulant injectors needed sterilizing and reconstructing. Interface ports had to be completely retuned. And all of that was before the most complicated repairs were undertaken. The sensory systems in each helm's retinal display.
I'm not joking, Master. Even using these parts as salvage, it will take more than a week for each suit of armor. Recoding their systems, rebuilding them to your bodies, retuning their interfaces to each of you. I cannot do it faster than that. I'm not sure anyone could.
Sirion stepped forward. A misfiring stabilizer in his left leg gave him a dragging limp, while his own features were cracked and bleeding.
And if you worked on only mine and your master's?
Septimus swallowed, careful to avoid Uzas's stare.
2 weeks, Lord Sirion. Perhaps 3.
Mortal, fix mine.
All eyes turned to Uzas. He snorted at them.
What? I need my armor tended to, the same as each of you,
he said. Talos disengaged his helm seals with a snake's hiss of vented air pressure. Removing the mangled ceramite took 3 attempts, and the prophet's face was a bruised and bloody painting of varied wounds. One of his eyes was crusted closed by a foul-looking scab, and the other glared, clean and black, devoid of an iris like all of the Nostromo born.
Firstly, do not address my artificer and our pilot as if you were a hygiene slave. Show some respect.
He paused to wipe his bloody lips on the back of his gauntlet.
Secondly, you bear the blame for putting us in these straits. Your urge to howl your way around the crew decks, drinking the blood of mortals, has removed us from being battle-ready for 2 months. Will you be the one to tell the Exalted he has lost 2 claws in 1 night?
Uzas licked his teeth.
The Branded chose to face us. They should have walked away. Then they'd be alive.
It is always so simple for you.
Talos narrowed the one eye that still worked. He filtered his tone through a last attempt at patience, seeking to keep the strain of his wounds from reaching his lips.
What madness infests your mind? What makes you incapable of understanding what you have cost us tonight?
Uzas shrugged. The bloody handprint painted onto his faceplate was all the expression he showed to them.
We won, didn't we? Nothing else matters. Enough,
Sirion shook his head, resting a cracked gauntlet on Talos's shoulder guard.
It's like trying to teach a corpse to breathe. Give up, brother.
Talos moved away from Sirion's placating hand.
There will come a night when the word brother is no longer enough to save you, Uzas.
Is that a prophecy, seer?
The other warrior grinned.
Smile all you like, but remember these words. When that night comes, I will kill you myself.
Each of them tensed as the door's chime sounded.
Who comes?
Talos called. He had to blink to clear his blurring vision. The wounds he'd taken weren't healing with the alacrity he'd expected, and he had the grating sense that the damage beneath his armor was worse than he'd first thought. A fist thumped against the door 3 times.
Soul Hunter!
The voice on the other side crackled by way of greeting. Its tone was surprisingly rich with respect, despite being as harsh and dry as a vulture's caw.
We must speak, Soul Hunter, so very much to speak of.
Lucorophus, Talos lowered his blade, of the bleeding eyes.